I'm so thrilled to be doing this course, and I'm so thrilled to have you guys on the line and live listening, and of course it will be recorded if you aren't able to stay on for the whole thing, and I know that some of you have other things you need to maybe jump up and go do during the course. So let's get right to it. We're going to start with a little bit of housekeeping. Want you to be comfortable, of course, without falling asleep. Hopefully you're using a speaker or a headset or, you know, whatever that's hands-free to give your shoulders a break. I am recording this, obviously, and how you can ask questions within the call is either in the Q&A box, and I believe just I will see that. And then if you write it in the chat, then other people can see that as well. So if you want to throw things in there, go ahead. I've got my attention split between a couple of different things, so I think I'm going to keep an eye on the Q&A. Let's do that. If you need to connect with me, enter in the Q&A, and if you want to chat where the other participants will see what you're saying then or writing, then you can put it in the chat. Alrighty. And then outside of the class, because this is, of course, a five-week course, you can shoot me an email. We'll also have the Q&A session. I'll be sending out a link for Doodle to come up with the best time for everybody. And there's squirrels scurrying across the roof, and it startled me. Okay, sorry about that. So, yeah, I'm available on email, the Q&A, and you know, there are also other ways, which are the one-on-one and coming up, which I'll talk a little bit more about. So what we are going to be doing together in these 5 weeks, we're going to be setting up your information systems so you know exactly where to find what you need, and I want to know what you need also. So I want to hear from you. I want you to send me information, email, call me, whatever, and say, this is specifically what I am needing. And again, that's also the form for the Q&A. And I want to get your full brain supporting you, not just your left brain. We'll be talking about that in just another minute. Integrating your to-do list with your schedule. Ha-ha. We like to make very unrealistic to-do lists. And so we're going to get it realistic, and we're going to get it dialed in with your schedule so that they're working together. We're going to develop a weekly practice that will relieve your mind and keep you connected with your priorities. I tell you, this one practice alone is absolutely amazing and will give you so much peace of mind that you will not know how you functioned without it before. We're going to identify how your days can flow with more ease and end with more smiles. Of course, I'm talking about managing your energy here, being aware of what you have to give, what you're needing, and learning how to work with that better instead of plowing through and kind of going on autopilot to just run, 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 and race, race, race. We've got a lot of patterns, a lot of habits that we are going to look at and get them working for you. We're going to mold your schedule to your priorities and your biorhythms. This is connected to that last one. It's working with your body instead of against it, basically. We want all of you to be working on your behalf. And we're also going to be playing with using your intuition and listening to your body to facilitate and easify all of it. Okay, so we're going to go practical, but we're also going to dive in and see how our intuition can help us out. In other words, we are going to get your shiz under control. So we've got the group format. I'll be presenting tools and strategies and practices. We'll do a little visualization, and now and again, there'll be some exercises for you to do on the call. We're also going to have the open office Q&A. There won't be planned lessons for those, though one of the things I love about Q&A is that the questions can trigger whole other trains of thought that I just didn't even think to include in the curriculum. So you never know what's going to come up in that. And of course, you can ask any questions. You can also email me the questions and I will answer them on the call, and then you can listen later. The other thing is that you can also use it sort of like a study session where I know that all of you are completely and totally busy and that implementing this stuff may seem a little pie in the sky. You could consider that a part of this course and that you dedicate that 1 hour a week to be implementing and working on this. And so you don't even have to talk. You could just be on the Q&A and just kind of listening or just kind of being there and working on what you need. And then if you come up with a question, you've got someone to ask right then and there. I'll also be sending out a few emails now and again with some reminders and maybe some like quick short tips and hopefully some inspirations to keep you on track and remembering that this 5 week period is, think of it like a container. Since you have committed to this course, let yourself dedicate time to configuring and setting up the systems that are going to support you. Instead of, you know, like maybe you think about it all year round, oh, I need to get more organized. Let this be a compressed time period where you do that. So give yourself that dedication. And then, of course, I would love to work with you one-on-one as well in individual sessions. And that's the best way to customize for you to ask, you know, even more in-depth questions, brainstorm ideas. I don't have all the answers. Okay, this is really important to remember. My job is to trigger you in coming up with your solutions and to let you know of what is possible and what is out there to help you. But based on your system, your needs, your whole configured system and situation is going to be specific to you. And I also want to help you troubleshoot. It's not often that everything is dialed in exactly right the first time. We play with it, we hack it, we tweak it, and we keep going. Okay? So, like I said, if you have questions during the call or something seems amiss or whatnot, please enter it in the Q&A. And I hope you have a glass of water nearby to keep you hydrated. Your natural professional avatar. Yes. This is one of the things that is so exciting to me. Hello again. So an avatar is a character. It's a persona. Why I like playing with them in our work as natural professionals is that one of the key ingredients that's been missing in our go-get-em, success at any price, is awareness and honoring of our own authenticity. We've been conditioned to look outside of ourselves and for our markers of success. Even how we should be feeling, you know, you see all these movies and magazines and you see these happy people or, you know, these really together people and they've got all this stuff going on for them. You're like, how do they do it? It's like, those are staged. You know, we get these impressions in our head from seeing what other people are doing and we forget to check in and see what is right for us. Our inner lives have been kind of relegated to your personal life. This isn't something that you bring into your work or even into the office or managing all of your commitments and whatever you're doing. Your interpersonal life is your business. And I think that's complete bullshit because the world needs us. It needs our heart and our spirit out there, and that is what is going to make the world a better place and what is going to allow us to find meaning in our commitments and to provide the best role models for the people that we're interacting with and to provide the best service for our clients. It's our connections with ourselves and thus our connections with other people that that really bring the juice to both our lives, but also to what we're doing and what we're bringing forth to the world, and therefore our success in the world. Let's see. The use of the avatar is intended to bring awareness to your inner experience, right? Because we've had all of this focus on our external experience, and now we're going to meld that with our inner experience. So whether, you know, you're zapping your inbox, responding to a challenging email, or, you know, just figuring out a simpler way to deal with your bill paying flow. Looking at both the logistics and the systems of it, but also your experience within that is going to inform your solutions and your best decisions. By bringing that aspect into this as well, you're giving yourself a better opportunity to develop systems that you're actually going to use and stick with. Okay, the other reason that I love working with the avatars is, I don't know if you can hear the dog clicking through here. Okay, there's a dog here. Clicking by every once in a while and pushing past me like right now. Okay, sorry. The other reason that I love working with the avatars is it is an opportunity to get our right and left brains working on the same team, right? The left brain brings the methodical order and language and the ability to label what we're doing. And the right brain brings the creative solutions and keeps the bigger context in mind. Right? With the right brain, we don't get lost in the forest, which we can with when we follow our left brain too much. I mean, that's how we get into these situations where, okay, I'm not going to go down that path. I promised myself I would not get into major, you know, left and right brain issues. So instead, I would like to jump in and meet for you to meet your personal, natural, professional avatar. Okay, so I'm going to hop off the screen so that you're not paying attention to me. And I would like for you to relax and take a deep breath and let your chair support you. Taking a deep breath, deep into your belly. Letting any tension fall away from your shoulders. Let any tension drain from your jaw. From your forehead. Your spine is straight and yet relaxed. And you're exactly where you know you want to be. To your natural professional avatar, this is you at the top of your game. You're capable, you're resourceful, you can handle anything that comes your way. You're connected to right timing. You stand strong in yourself, knowing that no matter what your situation is externally, you are a good person. You are an inherently good person. You are inherently good. Breathe that in. And feel for a moment what it feels like to be strong and confident, capable, on your game. and see yourself interacting with other people. Maybe you ran into someone at the store and they're asking how it's going, or you're telling someone about what you're up to, something that you're involved with. And you've just got that nice, strong, confident carriage. You're eloquent. You can spice and feel the strength of that connection, that relationship, and that connection, that engagement with the other person coming from your that strength in yourself. Imagine yourself taking care of a big project that you've been working on. You're well within time. You've included everything you want to include. You feel good about the final product. Something that you can be proud of. And that's what you produce all the time. Well ahead of deadline. Now imagine yourself moving through the day. You feel fluidity. You're prepared, you're organized, you have what you need. You've checked your list. You get to where you're going on time. You walk into your meetings with ease. You had plenty of time to park, you had a little bit of traffic, but you're still there on time. You're bringing your best self forth. The day flows smoothly and you finish it. Tired because you gave it your all. But feeling good about where you've been, who you've been, what you've put forth. So breathe in this fluidity. Breathe in this ease. You can come up with another name for this persona. And for our purposes, I'm going to call it your natural professional persona. So when I talk about or refer to your natural professional persona, I'm referring to this experience. All right. Okay, natural professionals unite. And let's keep on moving. The premise of this course, today's module, is simple and it is a little complex. So everything supports or drains you. Distractions drain you, and disorganized information is a distraction. Everything is a continuum, is on a continuum between supporting or draining your essential energy. And your essential energy is represented in your natural professional avatar. So we want to minimize those drains. Information parking spots seem like a very, you know, simple subject. And in a way they are. They represent a lot, though. And we can practice being our natural professional avatar, and we can practice being this best part of ourselves in placing our information, interestingly enough, and how we approach it. So I'm talking about everything from all of your various commitments, from the things that you do, your documents, your spreadsheets, your passwords, your travel ideas, customer vendor information, information about your kids' schools, and information about your house and what you've got going on there. It can even be, you know, meeting notes. It can be articles on, my favorite one that's come by lately into my email inbox was a link to an article on yoga poses that are good for menstrual cramps. And I know I'm not the only person in the world that suffers from that. And so this is an article that I might like to share with people. What do I do with it? So information parking spots are very important. These are the things that end up scattered around. This is why, and this is really getting to the heart of why this is so important. Information ends up scattered around. Information is very broad, right? It ends up in the stickies around your monitor. It ends up in, you know, notes on the back of receipts in your purse, in the stack of files on your desk, the stack of files behind you, you know, on whatever horizontal surface you've got paper, and the paper contains information. Let's jump ahead to get really specific on the three reasons that the information module is so important. So following up on this distractions, it's the little things that make big difference. Okay, there aren't any life-shattering systems that are going to change your world. It's the small habits and it's the small things that actually add up and make a huge impact. So when you are moving through your day, when you run into things that don't belong there, they get in the way of what is relevant for you right then. Okay, so clearing those out, one. And then the other thing is wading through stuff when you're looking for something, right? And so you've got this, things are lost, they're misplaced, you don't know what you did with it. These little chunks of time and energy in looking for what you need or trying to get out of the way of what you don't need provide a lot of friction. So that's why I want to focus on what do we do with these things so that we can remove that friction and help you stay in your menstrual professional avatar. The second thing is that the other systems that we're going to be talking about rely on your information systems being in place. Your email management, the review and planning session, and your action system all rely on your information being in place. So you don't take extra time thinking and figuring out, oh, where should this go? It goes there automatically. The feeling that I want you to really get from this is this feeling of fluidity and smoothness. It just flows. And the third thing is the Jedi mind tools. And for our purpose, my definition of a mind tool is anything that supports you in the conscious placement of your awareness. And there is so much bigger context around this that we're not going to get into right now. But I will hopefully get to talk about it more over the next 5 weeks. Okay, so let's go back to here. So we know that everything in its place and a place for everything. Oops. Oh, our reasons, clear intention setting and mindfulness, our mind tools. Clear intention setting dispels a lot of confusion. Mindfulness helps us remain connected with the meaning in our lives. So practicing these in our information management has huge ramifications in the rest of our life. Alrighty. Let's talk briefly about our playing field. This is the scope of what this module is about. So one, it's about our reference information. The flip side of this is your actionable information. Oh no. Okay. Little side thing. Kalia says that you're still on the welcome screen. Oh no. Oh my goodness. Yes. Thank you, Kalia. Oh. Well, hi. Apparently sharing was turned off, and I thought I was talking to you and showing you my cute slides this whole time, and apparently I wasn't. Oh. Anyway, all right, well, I've been talking to you and I've been sharing you with you cute slides, but now we'll do it for real. Let me, thanks, Claire. Yeah, let me know if that goes off again. Because like I said, I'm watching about three different windows here, and I'm having a, I might not catch if I accidentally hit pause sharing again. Okay, anyway. All right. Woo, there's a fly. Okay, so where are we? We are on our playing field. So we've got reference information and actionable information. We're going to save the actionable information for next week when we talk about the action system. The reference info is any information that you might need for future reference. So they may facilitate work that you're doing, but they don't trigger the action, okay? So basically, I bring that up because we're going to talk about your actionable info and storage next week. But the reference information, so that ends up, you know, typically we think of it in the filing cabinet, like that kind of stuff, and we'll talk about a lot more, but it's the stuff that you may need in the future. For example, digital files. You know what these are. They're hopefully organized on your computer. We'll talk about some strategies about doing that. They might be in Dropbox. They might be in Google Docs. They might be on your hard drive. They might be on your thumb drive. We have a lot of options these days. We're also going to be playing with hard copy files. Hard copy files comes under this domain. These are the ones that end up in your filing cabinet. If you have some form of easy access station on your desk or next to your desk, that's in there as well. Also, binders. Binders represent or are representative in the hard copy files. Papers on the loose. These are the ones that vex us tremendously. These are the stickies around your monitor, the little slips of paper all over your table. Yeah, papers that we don't know when they're from, they're all mixed up. You know, you can have a contract with a client mixed with a grocery list from 3 months ago. You know what those little papers are. They're basically the uncontained, unlabeled, unorganized ones that so far have managed to avoid being roped into some sort of organized location. The toop is a play on moop, which is from Burning Man, thoughts out of place. These are the thoughts that are running rampant in your head, the things that you're trying to remember that would be better stored in your system. Your head is not to be used as a storage space. So either you're trying to remember things, or what's also a thought out of place is if you're working on one thing and a thought pops up completely unrelated, is that going to distract you, or are you going to pop it where it belongs and get back to what you were doing? And I know you know what the right answer is there. Okay, lists. So this one is a little bit more complex than it sounds. When I say lists, you likely think of a bunch of items written in a vertical format, like a grocery list. But for our purposes, be aware of the essence of a list, which is a group of information relating to a clearly defined subject, right? So this is where we come back to clear intentions. items for a list can be tracked in countless forms, digitally and hard copy. So we're going to talk more about this in a little bit with more context. And the final part here in our playing field are the specialty applications. These actually store a lot of our information. Chances are that if you need to track and store a certain kind of information for a certain end, someone else has too. And there are a lot of smart, helpful people out there in the virtual world who have developed numerous programs for specific uses. Your calendar program for appointments, your digital address book for your contacts, QuickBooks for bookkeeping. Specialty apps are great. And with that, we're going to start in with the specialty applications. So these are the basics. I'm not going to assume that you have these dialed in. You very well may, but you'd be surprised, and I don't want to make assumptions. So the first one we're going to cover are contacts, right? So I absolutely recommend digital for maintaining your contacts. You can back up your file. You can store much more than someone's basic digits. You can sync it across devices. When you have a smartphone, you know, you'll never dial a number again. Macs, okay, so if you're Mac, their Mac's address book is totally sufficient. Gmail's contact is totally sufficient. And in fact, I sync my Mac address book with my Gmail contacts because on my computer, I prefer working out of my address book, but I make phone calls out of contacts in Gmail. So I don't want to be copying and pasting or, you know, actually having to, oh my goodness, dial. So the online the most important thing there is that you can sync. So this is the area that can have some confusion. And on the Q&A, I'm happy to talk it through with you if you don't have this dialed in. You've got your laptop, maybe you've got another computer, and you've got your smartphone or whatever other device. Google Suite is excellent for syncing between devices cross-platform, meaning Mac or PC. So some of the tips for making even more out of your address book, remember to enter in the phone area codes. Even if you don't leave the area all that often, sometimes you do, and then if you go to call someone and the area code isn't in there, then it's kind of a mess. So, simple habit, enter in area codes when you're entering in phone numbers. Use the other fields in the address book. They have all these different fields. You don't need to use all of them. Use the ones that can help you contain information that you are wanting to keep. For example, birthdays or people's spouses' names. Kids' names, I mean, even their dog names if they're a client. The more information that you have about your clients and that you feed back to them and remember, the better. It's awesome. If you remember that someone's dog's name is Fido and the dog's birthday is August 25th, you know, you're going places with that person. And use the notes section. The notes section can be really, really powerful. So, for example, before I took the workshops online, I would enter a keyword in the notes section to designate clients or workshop people. And I would do that by just entering in workshop 2009. Well, I could have done workshop 2009 or workshop 2010, workshop 2011 if I wanted to know which year they were. Otherwise, I can just do workshop. Clients, I just put in a single word in the notes section called clients. This way, I can do a search for workshop and all the participants show up. I can do a search for clients and all of the clients will show up. The other thing that you can put in the notes section are driving directions, which isn't as relevant now with our smartphones having really smart GPS capabilities, but especially if you live in a rural area, it always behooves to ask, will Google Maps get me to your house? Because it doesn't always. And if not, have them send you their driving directions, and you enter it in the notes section of the contact. Therefore, it will always be there. You're not leaving it in the email that they sent it to you in. You can put in home care notes. So, for example, you can enter in a keyword in your notes section for home or home maintenance. And this is where you would have a contact for the plumber and your electrician and your handyman and the dog sitter and anyone else related to helping out with the home. Then you can do a search for smart folder, right? So smart folders or search for the home maintenance keyword. And if you go out of town, you've got your list ready to print out of anyone who is relevant for your home. Within the individual contact cards, for example, plumber, you might have, cleared washing machine drain in September of 2013, just as a reminder of when the last time was they came out. Yeah, it depends on how much information you want to have reference to. But using the notes section for the keywords to either do a search or a smart folder, and smart folders are very easy to set up. They're based on a simple search criteria. Really powerful way to use your address book where you don't have to remember someone's name in order to still be able to find them. So I want to point out that I'll be doing a bunch of how-to short videos and setting up a smart folder and address book can be one of them. Kathy, if you wouldn't mind making a note of that, that'd be super. So learn how to do that, and if you don't know how to set up a smart folder, I'll make a little video for that. But if you use a different program, then you'll want to know how to do that in your own program. Okay? All right, moving on to the calendar. Oh, digital. Yes, digital calendar. Absolutely. Because you can enter in recurring events. You can have multiple calendars. You can share individual calendars. It's easy to sync them across the devices. And Google Calendar is pretty much where it's at. It's the center of the universe for calendars. So even though I pretty much exclusively use the calendar on my computer, which is iCal, I haven't synced to Google Calendar, and I do this because I do share some calendars with other people. And also, if you use any third-party specialty applications online, for example, my scheduling program, my online scheduling program that I can use with clients, accesses the Google Calendar. So just like my contacts, I have iCal synced with Google Cal, and I have my address book synced with Google Contacts. Pretty much center of the universe there. let's see, what else? So the Google Cal is the base, and you sync it to whatever other calendar app you're using, really, and it's the easiest one to sync onto your other devices as well. So tips, have one calendar. So if you have multiple calendars, have one that's dedicated for your scheduled appointments. And this is mostly relevant if you have a family or track other people's appointments. You don't want to be waiting between, you know, which ones are yours and which are actually someone else's as far as where you need to be on any given day or any given afternoon. Your scheduled commitments need to be viewable quickly and easily. Again, use the next section. Things that you want to remember to take to an appointment. Class call in details like this one. You can put in the driving directions or someone's address if it's not going in the address book. If it's going in the address book, you know, I recommend putting it there. If it's a one-time thing, put it in the notes section in your calendar so you're not flipping through your email, again, flipping through the email, looking for that information. One other thing to add to number two about having one scheduled, one calendar dedicated to your appointments. Enter all of your scheduled appointments, even your weekly coffee date that you've been doing for years with your best friend, Beth. You know, even if you know you're never going to miss it, enter it in. Have one place. That gives your mind the peace that everything is captured and that you're not forgetting or missing out on something. Final tip for the calendar, I highly recommend working off of the week view. The month view doesn't give enough detail. The day view, I don't know, it's kind of a bit much. I'm in the week view about 95% of the time. And I was working with a client and she didn't know about the week view. She was always working out of the month view and she wasn't able to see everything. Like I said, I don't want to assume that everybody knows all the different functionalities of your program. Okay, next basic, passwords. Passwords, passwords, passwords. If you do online banking, I strongly recommend using a password manager. This makes it easy to have long, complicated passwords because you never have to type them in. A good password manager auto-generates tough passwords, and a tough password is, you know, long. It's 10 to 12 characters. It's lowercase, uppercase, numbers, and other characters. Coming up with that kind of stuff on your own, not how you want to be using your time. Typing those in, definitely not how you want to spend your time. Dealing with identity theft, definitely don't want to be dealing with that. You need strong, strong passwords on your financial sites. And, you know, it's recommended that you change them on a regular basis as well. And you don't want to use the same one for each one. Have a different, long, complicated one for each of them. So you have a couple of options. I use the cross-platform and cross-browser manager called 1Password, and I will put a link to it on the resources page. It's not free. It's a $50 program, and to me, it's absolutely worth it. It serves basically a bookmarking capability. It can store credit cards, information. It's a convenient place to store your software license numbers. It's a convenient place to store a copy of your passport, your social security card, your birth certificate. It syncs to your smartphone. And it's stored in Dropbox, which means that you can access it from anywhere in case of emergency. What that means, though, is that you need to remember basically two passwords. One is the master password that gives you access to everything in 1Password. So if anybody comes onto your computer and they open up 1Password, they cannot get in unless they have your master password. And I'm traveling a lot, so I actually need to be thinking about if I lose my computer, right? So that means that I also need to be able to know what my Dropbox password is. And here's a hint, a trick. The Dropbox password and my master password can be the same. Now, your other option is to use like Safari or Firefox. Those are encrypted as well. They're encrypted, however, they rely on your password for, you know, your admin password, which means that you want that to be a strong password. Okay, so you still need one strong master password, and that is protecting your whole computer. The disadvantages of using the Safari or the Firefox one is that they're only relevant for that browser. If you use both Safari and Firefox and you kind of flip around between browsers, you'll have to enter in your passwords more than once. The other thing is that if someone's on your computer and they go to a financial website, it will autofill. That's one of the benefits of having of doing this. You've got autofill, which means that if it's not you, that person can still get in and autofill to get in. So if you're the only one who uses your computer, that's fine. But if other people who might not be as trustworthy use your computer, then you want your password to be behind a master password. My understanding is that Firefox has this feature. You can set a master password that you basically set, I think it was set one time per session or something like that. Yeah. So again, I like 1Password because you just get plugins, you just get little add-ins or add-ons for every browser that you use. So you've got one file, it stores on Dropbox, and you just have different add-ons for each browser that you use. Wow. Strong master password, that's just one to remember. Yeah, there's different strategies. You know, I've read about different strategies on how you come up with a strong master password. So, you know, we can talk about that in the Q&A if that is of interest to you. Okay. To-do manager is part of your action system. So we'll talk about that next week. For right now, think about capturing what you need to do in one place, if you aren't already. If you're paper-based, dedicate a notebook to capturing these. The important practice here is that when something pops into your head, like, oh, I have to return that library book, or, oh, I have to remember to call back client X, or, oh, I have to find out where to get a visa for Thailand, you automatically reach, this is the key word, you automatically reach for that one depository, that notebook, or that one program, or whatever it is. You go to that one place. The first capturing device to consider is whatever you have or are willing to have with you always. Okay? And so we will talk about this more next week. For now, one place. And if you haven't had water lately, have a sip. Okay, list manager. So I recommend Evernote, and I'll have my little tutorial for Evernote up tomorrow. These are typically the papers on the loose. A lot of the emails that end up in your, you know, getting left in your inbox are in there because they didn't have the right list to go through. If you want a place that's helpful, easily accessible, again, I love the cross-platform, cross-device, cross-browser programs that store your information, and Evernote is one of them. So that said, Full disclosure, I do use Evernote, and I've hacked my to-do manager to serve as what you would probably use Evernote for. And the most important thing here is clear labeling, being very clear and intentional about what information is going where. So, real quick scenario. You're visiting a friend in New York City. She takes you to your favorite bookstore to meander, and there are a few books that you've been wanting to check out. You pull out your smartphone, you pull up the titles, and you ask the salesperson where to find them. You were able to do that because you had that digital list manager that synced across your devices. If you're paper-based, you've got that page in the back of your planner that says books to check out, and you know exactly where to drop that information. You're consistent, you have follow-through, and you put it there. You know exactly where to go when you need it. So why I like Evernote, and I do use Evernote, it's great for online research because you can clip entire websites, which means it captures both the URL as well as a screenshot. So you have a little bit of visual for those visual people, you get visual, and you can add a note saying what you liked about it. Why did you clip this out? So this is why this is different than a bookmark. A bookmark just saves the URL, right? So here you can label the note, like say it's you're doing research on traveling in Thailand, you can say, you know, this site was great, has great ideas for adventure travel. Or this site has a lot of great references for budget accommodations. You can say why you liked the site to help your future self understand where it should go to get back to your Thailand research. You can create text notes for lists that you want to access offline. Unless you have premium, it's not going to save the screenshots for offline use. But you can access your text notes for offline use. For example, grocery store. You can forward emails to your Evernote account, which is basically how the last time I had a few emails that were kind of lingering in my inbox, they got forwarded to Evernote because they actually contained reference information that I wanted. You can share individual notes with somebody. So you can share grocery lists with a partner who's at the store right then, instead of trying to tell them over the phone what it is that that you want them to pick up. Okay, two more. Dropbox and Google Drive, Google Docs. So Dropbox acts like a drive. So what's the difference between Dropbox and Google Drive, basically here? Dropbox acts like another part of your hard drive. It will take any file type, and those files open up in programs on your computer. You can share folders with someone else. It's accessible offline, and you get 2 gigs of free storage. There are ways to get more storage. For example, if you refer someone and they download it, you get more storage. And so, for example, my on the resource page, there's a link to Dropbox, and that's a link basically to my account. So if you sign up, then I get extra storage. So that's how you get more storage for free on Dropbox. Google Drive has limited file type, and you work on the files in Google's editor, which means you need to be online. It's really easy to share folders and files with someone else. It's great for collaboration because multiple people can work on the document at the same time. And my understanding is that right now it's accessible offline only if you use Chrome, and it's free storage. So for general practice, I use Dropbox for the majority of my files, whether I'm sharing them or not. because I'm traveling, and again, should I ever lose my computer, all of my files are there. And then I also share specific folders with other people. And that's more, I guess I think of it more like if I'm sharing, if I want the other person to have access to the document, whereas in Google, like I said, those, for me, I use those for more of a collaborative context. So people that I'm working with, rather than just wanting to share a file with them. So with clients, I have a folder in Google Drive because I want them to be able to access their homework and I don't have to copy and paste it or have two different places to go to look for their information. With the bookkeeper, we use a lot of different file types, and so we have a shared folder in Dropbox. I think this would be a good Q&A topic to brainstorm what should be kept where for your situation. So those are the basics of the tools. And no matter which of those that you're using, we've got a mantra of three principles. One, clarity, clear labeling. Your mind isn't going to trust it if it doesn't know what it is. So in order to clearly label it, you have to know what it is, and then think about how to best relay that to your future self, and then label it appropriately. Two, consistency. Your brain works on patterning. Each time you go down a path in your head to a certain type of info, you're reinforcing the path there, which means it gets easier. Consistency also is what allows you to hack a program successfully for your own use. And then, of course, follow through, taking info where it belongs. You don't leave stuff to file, update, or set up later. That is a major source of clutter. The follow through. I'm going to be mentioning that more than once. So let's look at a few scenarios and see how they might play out. We've been working with a nutritionist who suggested cutting wheat from your diet. You went online. Let's get all personable again. Hi. You went online and found a recipe for wheat-free brownies. And it's called Harriet's Favorite Wheat-Free Brownies. So your niece is visiting, and you think, I want to make brownies. Where's that recipe? So where do you put it? Here are two options for where you what you can do with that recipe. So I would store it digitally because I currently don't have a permanent kitchen. That's one reason. Two, because I don't have a permanent space, I don't have a printer hooked up, which means I can't print it out. And there are two other factors here that are very important. One is I have an AirBook, which is very small and light, and I'm accustomed to carrying it around. I'm used to two things. One, it's totally easy for me to take it into the kitchen, right? I'm not like running back and forth from the office to the kitchen looking at the screen because I've got this big monitor or something. And two, based on my own practice, I've seen that I am willing to open up my AirBook in the kitchen to pull up a recipe and follow it there. Thinking that I'm going to go digital, but in reality, I never take my AirBook to the kitchen because I don't, you know, like I'm afraid it's going to get wet or something. That's not helpful. It needs to be something that you're willing to do, right? Okay, so then, since I have it digital, I'm going to copy and paste that into a document because my MO is to have one recipe per document. Then when I go to save it, I'm looking at how I name it, right? Clear intention and thinking about how am I going to be thinking about this in the future? Harriet's favorite wheat-free brownies is not how I'm going to think about it, because I don't know who Harriet is. And in 3 months, when I go to make brownies, I'm not going to think Harriet. I'm going to think B for brownie. So I'm going to change the title. Or I'm going to save the document as brownies-wheat-free, right? Because that's what I want to know about this recipe. Brownies, B for brownies. And then I file it in my recipes folder, which is where all of my other recipes are, and it's easy to find. So second option here would be hard copy, right? So say I don't want to take my airbook in and I have a printer. Maybe I'll print out that recipe, hole punch it, take it to the kitchen, and file it in my binder that's labeled My Recipes, and maybe I have a section in that binder called Dessert. Or maybe since the wheat-free thing is new for me, maybe I have a section called Dessert-Wheat-Free. Or I have a binder that's called Wheat-Free, like My Wheat-Free Recipes, and then I put that in Dessert. So, of course, those binders are labeled either my recipes, my wheat-free recipes, and since I've hole-punched my recipe, I can put it right in there. So that in a few months, when my niece is over and I want to make wheat-free brownies, I go to my wheat-free binder, open it up to Dessert, and there are Harriet's favorite. And there, it doesn't matter if it says Harriet's. I don't care if it says Harriet's. That's great. Because it's easy to read that. It's not preventing me from getting to where I need to go. Okay? So we've got labeling strategy there, clear intention, and thinking ahead to where am I going to look for this when I need it. So then let's look at a little bit more complex of a scenario. So Terry is a life coach, okay? And a former client of hers raves about her services to a friend. And as a result, the friend sends an email to Terry saying that she wants to change jobs, but she isn't sure where she's headed, and can Terry help her with this? So there are several facets to this scenario. If Terry's in a hurry, she might be tempted to throw together a response because she's got this thing in her head that says, I must respond within 24 hours, right? Because to her, that's what being professional is about, is responding really fast. So she wants to respond within 24 hours, but she's really in a hurry, and obviously she didn't schedule this in. It wasn't something that was planned. And so she puts a bunch of stuff into an email, which means if she's in a hurry, there's more likely to be grammar errors. She's more likely to forget to include some important information. And what else? Yeah, it's probably not going to be as comprehensive and it's going to have more errors. If she's really busy, and maybe she doesn't have this 24-hour thing, she's really busy, and in 3 days, at the end of the day, she's like, oh my gosh, I still haven't responded to this person. And so she... It starts becoming this thing, and she's like, oh, my gosh, I still haven't responded to this person. It's a potential client. I'm not getting off on a good foot and all that kind of thing. So she starts getting stressed out about it, and then she finally jumps in there and late in the day, and she's tired, but she's like, I'm going to get it out today. And so it takes her 40 minutes to write it when it normally would have, you know, taken her 20 minutes to write it, and she still doesn't know, she's not confident that she included everything. So here's the thing. It's a recurring pattern, right? So we're looking for patterns. She's a coach. She gets emails from people inquiring about her services, which means that she can have a ready-to-send email that she stores in a draft folder in her email program. So our life coach, Terry, after writing the same email 5 times to people, finally said, uh-huh. And she took the time right? She roped off a good amount of time to think through what should be in this email. And she made it comprehensive. And she thought about what are the concerns that I've noticed people have, and she addressed them. What else did she put in it? She explained what kind of commitment would be required and how it works, and what the next step is, which would be to go to her online scheduler and to schedule a trial appointment. And then she also included a placeholder for an article that she had written. Now, she's written several articles on different subjects, and so she doesn't have one already in there. This is the second part of this information storage scenario, and that is she's written 10 articles that have been published in other magazines or other publications. And so she has those in a folder in Evernote called My Articles. And it's one note per article, and it's got a link to the site that published it, you know, to the direct page, you know, so you take to the direct page on their website. But then in each note, she also has two, like a one or two sentence summary of what this is about in the context of how that would be important for future people. So that when she gets this email from this woman saying that she's looking to change jobs, she can refer her to her article on life transitions. And she's already got a couple of sentences saying, you know, life transitions can be big and scary, you know, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Here are whatever her article is about. I don't know where her article is about. I made it up. Okay. So what happened then when Terry got the email? She goes into her email program. Well, she's already in the email program, right, because she just got her her client's friend. And she copies and pastes in so she can respond. You know, hits reply, copies and pastes from her ready to send for how it works email. She customizes the first sentence or two, referring to the friend, makes some comment about life transitions. She goes to Evernote. She gets the link to her article with her couple of sentence intro to it and signs off. It's taken her less than 5 minutes, and it has all of the information that she would want to have in there and feel good about it. Boom. Out within 24 hours, took less than 5 minutes. That is the power of seeing what your patterns are and pulling together the information that is going to support the different steps of the pattern. Okay, so then let's talk strategies. Kind of jumping from big picture back to some specifics, right? So how are you going to find some of these things? The first thing is file organization. And I do have a filing e-course that has, you know, like a 10-page workbook and video, and I'll include the link to that in the resources. So in general, both for hard copy and also for your digital, I recommend categories, then subjects, then file titles. So for your filing cabinet, the category is going to be what the whole drawer is called. For example, house, home. Subject would be areas within the filing cabinet taking advantage of alphabetical order, for example, insurance. Then the individual titles, for example, would be home, auto, life, I don't know, whatever insurance you have. So what that looks like digitally, so there are two windows here. And the top one is the MacBook, and the bottom one is in Dropbox. So they're not identical because I'm no longer using my MacBook regularly. But what I wanted to show was these here are the main categories. They're broad categories, basically business, Adobe, that's an automatic one. I didn't know if I can delete it. Artiste, broad and more, that for me represents house and home, renters, etc. Community member, creative, family, significant other, and writer. So those are the broad categories. And within the business one, this is what my snapshot looked like in December. These would be the subjects within the category. So when I got the AirBook, instead of moving everything, because I was space limited, I took what I knew I needed, and then I made space for what I might need, and I moved stuff as it was needed. So now this is in Dropbox, which I can reference from my MacBook or the AirBook. Same thing, we've got these broad categories, and more or less are going to mirror these. But since I'm in a different position in my life, my categories are a little bit different. Then we've got subjects. Again, these are relevant now. And then we have the individual titles. And so going back, Clea, I'll get to your question in a little bit. Okay, well, actually, at the end of this one. So, Clea asked the question, if you don't, so referring back to the scenario with Terry, our life coach, what if you don't have the 5 minutes when the email comes through to find the draft and customize it? We're going to be talking about that in our email management. I'm going to defer that question. Okay, so there, so back to our filing. File organization. More detail on this in the filing e-course. Okay? So that, I mean, it's a whole course in itself right there. Naming conventions. I am a super geek at heart, and I love naming conventions. Naming conventions are basically strategies that make it easy on your future self and on other people to find what you need. It's where you get, it's the consistency, consistency, consistency. And it's based on the reality check that if you can't find it, you can't use it. And the second reality check that if it's not worth the time to decide what it is and to label it appropriately and put it in its place, then honestly, it's not worth keeping. If you can't find it, you can't use it. So naming convention, for example, client. So this would be category business. That's one folder. The next folder is subject clients. And within the clients folder, this is what my list of files might look like. This first one is a folder, and you'll notice the little tick mark here. That's a single quote. That, or no, no, it's the prime. Oh my goodness. It's the key above the tab below the tilde. And what that does is it floats it to the top of the list. See here, I did this two different ways. We're alphabetical here. But I was using logo items all the time, so I wanted it at the top of the list. And I can do that in two ways. I can either put the little prime here, which is the button above the tab, or, like over here, I can say A for Project Simplify, and it's going to jump to the top of the list. Similarly, I have my past clients archived in the same folder, so I don't want them mixed in with all of my current clients. I move them to the archive folder, and I labeled that V, so it would be at the end of the list. And then for consistency, I'm always going to do first last name or last first. I'm not going to mix it. I'm not going to do sometimes first only or sometimes last only. Consistency is key. Dating. That was a funny name. Anyway, we're still talking about naming conventions. So some sets of files lend really well to date organization. One of the naming conventions to always remember is that you want to use 2 digits for the month. Otherwise, October is going to come after January instead of February, right? If you say 1 and then 10, then 2, you know, it throws things out of whack. So see over here, again, I wanted the inbox on top, so I have the little tick mark and inbox closest to the top of the list. The 00 month is my template folder. So you can see here I have January down to September. For October, I'm going to copy, I'm going to duplicate this folder because it has some subfolders already in it. I'm going to duplicate it and rename it 10-2013 Oct for October. At the end of the year, I'll take all of these 2013 files and I'll put them in a folder down here called X2013. These are my archive for 2011, 2012, 2013 will go right after that, and I'll leave this 00 month because that's my template, and I'll start again 01-2014 January. Putting 2013 on each of these is redundant, so in part it's there for purposes of display. So powerful to be able to use dates in that way. Version control. There's a couple of different strategies. You can add a V1, a V2, or a V3 at the end of a file, or you can do it by date. And there are other ways to do it. The key thing here is consistency. If you're doing version control, that means you're probably working with another person. And so importantly is to communicate with them and to have clear and maybe even have notes in a Google Doc, right, a shared document that explains what your version control is. Oftentimes, we just replace the previous one. The other way, if you're not working with someone else, you can always put the original in an archive folder and have the current one out in your main folder. You know, there's a lot of different ways to do it. Consistency is key. But if you don't have a way, you can use one of these, V1, V2, V3, or version 8.14 for August 14 or August 16. Label it. Even if you think it's entirely obvious, label it. Label it, label it. Now, obviously, labeling and naming conventions go hand in hand. For the digital file naming, it's pretty straightforward, and I talked a little bit about that when, you know, we talked about the brownies example. For hard copy files, labeling means taking the time to write clearly with a fine point Sharpie on file folders, for example. It means using file labels if you are reusing your file folders and have scratched out the names, or if you're using dark-colored file folders. It means putting labels on the supply shelf that you share with other people so everyone knows what goes where. It means being clear about what each of the 10 binders in your office contain and writing the contents on the spine of the binder. It means writing the title or client name and date at the top of the page so that next week, when you see this piece of paper again, you know what that page of notes is about. And for the digital files, coming back to follow through, it means taking the time to change the title of the document to make it easy on your future self. And mostly this comes up in, besides in naming your files, but when you download or save an attachment, change the name of the file, because now that document is in your system. It's not in the system of whoever named the file. Change it so that it makes sense for you. The other place that labeling is really important is, for example, the trays on your desk. So you have a stack of four, and the top one is for the inbox, the second is for bills to pay, and the third is for actionables, and the fourth is work in progress. Even if you swear, you will always remember that bills to pay goes on the second one. Label those trays. This is your way of declaring to the universe that you know what this space collects and that it deserves a place in your life and in your energy flow. Okay? Label. So our last thing here that we'll go over, we'll just blow right through, is this. I want to talk a little more about a systems approach, and hopefully this will trigger a system that you would like to approach differently for organizing your information. This is for bill paying. So the same thing keeps happening every month. Bills come in. And you can do this whole process identically, you know, different steps, but if you get your bills digitally. But if your bills come in through the mail, you know that they come in through the mail. You open and recycle it when you get it. So you get it, rip it open, toss all those extra little things that you never need, and you put it in a spot for bills to pay. Okay, it's a designated spot. Hopefully it's not your kitchen counter. It can be a really cute little box that you've decorated and put on the wall. I mean, there are so many options. But where do you pay your bills? Because that's probably where you're going to want to put it. So you put it where it belongs, which has to do with where you're going to access it next. After you go to pay it, you'll write on it, and this is just part of your flow, paid check 290 or paid OBP for online bill pay on September 24th. You write that directly on it and immediately drop it in the paid bills file for business or personal. So just to be clear, I'm not saying that this is what your system should be. I'm just saying that this is a system. It happens every month. It's consistent. How your system plays out is going to depend on how you actually pay your bills and, you know, how you actually file them and all that kind of thing. But you know that this happens regularly. Therefore, you can break it down. You can do these cute little circles. Break it down into the different phases. Say, okay, where does it make sense to put this? Where do I want to access it? Will that be online or digitally? And next week in the action system part, we'll also talk about tying this into your action system. For example, when do you pay bills? How do you remember where your online bills are that need to get paid? We'll talk about that next week. Thus, taking another sip, I'm going to send to you a link to the resources page that has links to the different things I talked about. I'll have up an Evernote tutorial by tomorrow. We're going to talk action systems next week. And in the email that I send you this afternoon, will also be a